Peter B. Collins with News and Comment, Tuesday, April 24th, 2012. This news just broke this afternoon. Report of a mad cow case discovered in a California dairy cow. This is a report from the San Francisco Chronicle's website, sfgate.com. The chief veterinary officer at the U.S. Department of Agriculture has confirmed that a cow carrying bovine spongiform BSE, or mad cow disease, has been discovered, and this is reported on a dairy farm in California's Central Valley. Came as part of a routine inspection after the cow was sent to a rendering facility, and it is the fourth reported case in the United States. Now, we go back a few years to Moses Lake, Washington, where the last certified case of mad cow disease in an infected animal has been reported. There may have been others since. We do have cases of people who have died recently here in California from the human variants of BSE, and it has not been traced to any particular exposure to specific animal products. But I'd like to point out that we did not fix the problem after the outbreak in about 2003, and that we still have a situation where the United States Department of Agriculture is not permitted to recall beef products and to actually go out there and pull them out of stores. We still have a voluntary system that relies on the goodwill, good intentions, and best practices of agribusiness in this country. And it is shameful that in an era when we can track all kinds of things with the computers and barcodes and that sort of thing, that we remain in the dark ages when it comes to the safety of our food supply. Last week, on the grisly anniversary of the blowout in the Gulf of Mexico, I noted that no one has been held criminally liable for the incredible damage, the massive damage to sea life, to the ecosystems, and to human beings who make their living from the Gulf, not to mention the incredible damage on shore from the oil that washed up. Well, we have the first person who has been fingered, an engineer who works for BP named Kurt Mix, aged 50, described as a senior BP drilling engineer, allegedly destroyed hundreds of text messages sent to a supervisor that described the high volumes of oil flowing from the ruptured well. And this is very interesting because he's a pretty mid-level guy. And the shame and potential legal responsibility for the mess in the Gulf, and then the efforts to minimize what was actually gushing out of the Macondo well, these deserve full investigation. And like so many cases, it appears that Kurt Mix may be the fall guy, but it's progress that at least a single indictment has been announced, and we will see if it goes further from there. Well, I want you to enjoy the rich irony of what I'm about to tell you. Roman Catholic leaders are calling for 2 weeks of public protests against President Barack Obama's policies as they intensify their argument that the administration is engaged in a war on religion. The Catholic bishops have announced, and this is, I'm reading it verbatim, that from July 21st to July 4th, I know that's ass backwards, but that's the way it's printed here. They are going to launch 2 weeks of protests, largely centering on contraception. And, you know, what do they want to do? Take women in America back to the dark ages? That seems to be the game here. The 2 weeks of planned protest against the Obama administration's policies could, quote, be the game changer in the presidential election. That's right. The Catholic bishops are interfering in secular politics over birth control, which is not even one of the Ten Commandments or considered that kind of dogma in the Catholic liturgy. It's a recommendation from the Vatican not to use contraception. But Catholics are not required to go to confession for using birth control. So it's not considered to be a sin. And yet the bishops are portraying this as a deep moral issue of great outrage. And it just shows the thinly veiled political agenda that they have. Now, the rich irony is that I got this report from the Washington Times. That's right, the Mooney paper. It's Reverend Moon who is promoting this message from the Catholic bishops of a war on religion. Isn't that amazing? And the Catholic bishops have shown that if they can beat back marriage equality, they'll join forces with Mormons, with evangelical Christians, and others who they would ordinarily shun. But the enemy of our enemy is, well, you know how that one goes. Also, the war on women continues in this country. Planned Parenthood clinics report a pattern of suspicious visitors that they consider to be part of a hoax, a trap, like, oh, something James O'Keefe might do to honor Andrew Breitbart. What they're doing is individuals go into a Planned Parenthood center and say that they want to check the sex of a pregnant woman's fetus. And they say that they're going to have an abortion if they aren't happy with the sex of that fetus. And this is a trap to try to show that gender selection is a fundamental cause of abortion in this country. And fortunately, Planned Parenthood appears to be onto this and working to defuse the situation and also to undermine the critics who are attempting this entrapment. Here in San Francisco, Wells Fargo, which is the biggest bank in the nation now in terms of market capital, held its annual meeting, and Occupy protesters, among others, made their way to the event. There were protesters there, and about a dozen of them got into the session. Three of them who spoke up and denounced Wells Fargo for investing in private prisons and pursuing home foreclosures were escorted out of the meeting. Barbara Casey of Portland, Oregon, one of those kicked out, said she was a part of the group called One Share Protesters, meaning they have a single share of Wells Fargo stock. She thinks about 30 similarly situated individuals got into the meeting. They did have metal detectors. You had to prove that you were a shareholder to get in. The Reverend Gloria Del Castillo of San Francisco said she was joining the protest not just as a religious leader, but as someone who is going through foreclosure herself. Quote, after banking with Wells Fargo for decades and having a great credit score, I asked them for a loan modification so I could stay in my home. Wells Fargo denied it. John Stumpf, the CEO and president of Wells Fargo, had his compensation package of just under $20 million approved by shareholders. Ah, the life of the 1%. Back on tax day on April 17th, I mentioned that in a personal ritual, I took my tax returns to the post office. And there I encountered a postal worker. He wasn't on duty, but he was a member of the Postal Workers Union. And he was leafleting about the efforts to shut down massive parts of the U.S. postal system. And this is a completely contrived controversy. The postal officials now are saying they're forced to close almost 3,700 post offices, about 10% of those across the country, and that they are contemplating eliminating Saturday mail deliveries. They're going to cut out a bunch of regional processing centers. And all of this is bogus. It is based on an act of Congress that required the Postal Service, alone among any government or private entity, to fully fund 100% of its future health benefits for 75 freaking years. Nobody has to do that. This is a phony way of putting huge liabilities on the balance sheet of the Postal Service so that we have this phony crisis that requires these drastic steps. And Matt Taibbi, who does a great job on economic issues, has a piece out in Rolling Stone dated the 24th of April, and I direct your attention to it because he is accentuating the points that I have made, and I hope that you will take it to heart. The Obama team has released information on its fundraising progress so far. And the bottom line is you and I are going to get emails almost every day asking for money for Barack's reelection. Why? Because the corporate goons are not kicking in the way they did in 2008. For example, from the securities and investment sector, the Obama income, the revenue raised to date, is 68% less than it was in 2008. From real estate, 60% less. Finance, 53% less. Business services, 46% less. And this is pretty interesting because, from my point of view, Obama didn't crack down on these business interests in any meaningful way. And yet, they are punishing him by putting their money behind Republicans in House and Senate races and presumably the incredibly lame campaign of Mitt Romney as the presumed Republican nominee. And it's not that I'd like to see Obama getting more corporate cash. I actually think this is a healthy development. But they will shift the burden to the little people and do a lot more fundraising online. And finally, today I want to credit my friend Steve Pizzo. You can read his rants at newsforreal.com. He posts every day, sometimes more than once. And he forwarded an article published Monday in the Chicago Tribune under the byline of Rex W. Hupke. And it is an obituary for Facts, F-A-C-T-S. He writes, to the shock of most sentient beings, Facts died Wednesday, April 18, after a long battle for relevancy with the 24-hour news cycle, blogs, and the Internet. Though a few expected Facts to pull out of its years-long downward spiral, the official cause of death was from injuries suffered recently when Florida Republican Representative Alan West steadfastly declared that as many as 81 of his fellow members of the House of Representatives are communists. Facts held on for several days after that assault, brought on without a scrap of evidence or reason, before expiring peacefully at its home in a high school physics book. Facts was 2,372. The obituary continues, Facts was born in ancient Greece, the brainchild of famed philosopher Aristotle. Through the 19th and 20th centuries, Facts reached adulthood as the world underwent a shift toward proving things true through the principles of physics and mathematical modeling. There was respect for scientists as arbiters of the truth, and Facts itself reached the peak of its power. People unable to understand how science works began to question Facts, and at the same time, there was a rise in political partisanship and a growth in the number of media outlets that would disseminate information, rarely relying on feedback from Facts. Though weakened, Facts managed to persevere through the last two decades, despite historic setbacks, including Bill Clinton's affair with Monica Lewinsky, the justification for George W. Bush's decision to invade Iraq, and the debate over Barack Obama's American citizenship. Facts was wounded repeatedly throughout the recent GOP primary campaign, near fatally when Michelle Bachmann claimed a vaccine for sexually transmitted diseases causes mental retardation. In December, Facts was briefly hospitalized after MSNBC's erroneous report that candidate Mitt Romney's campaign was using an expression once used by the Ku Klux Klan. But friends and relatives of Facts said Congressman West's claim that dozens of Democratic politicians are communists was simply too much for the aging concept to overcome. Facts is survived by two brothers, rumor and innuendo, and a sister, emphatic assertion. Services are alleged to be private. In lieu of flowers, the family requests that mourners make a donation to their favorite super PAC. Facts, rest in peace. And I rest my case. Be sure to send this podcast far and wide because it's free. Share it with your friends, and I'm very grateful.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then.